We will begin. It's right at the top of the hour. So, hello, everybody. It is Thursday, the 20th of December, 2023, in the Fred Bertelsen Old Time Radio Room. And we're here tonight to listen to Old Time Radio and to chat. I don't know which we'll do more of, but we'll see as time goes by. I'm John subbing for Larry tonight, who's around and may join us later, but he is involved with another meeting concurrently. So
John, it's the first. Happens. It's the 21st.
Yeah, actually.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
So you want to try that again, sir? Because it is the 21st.
Okay.
First day.
Take two.
Sorry about that. Yeah, no, you're right.
Take two, sir. Take two.
Hello there, and welcome to the Fred Bertelsen Old Time Radio Room. This is Thursday, December 21st, 2023, and I'm John subbing for Larry. Larry's in another meeting, but he'll be around as time moves along. And we're going to be talking and listening to Old Time Radio tonight. Walden is presenting, so that'll be coming your way in a little less than a half hour. Before we do anything else, we'll talk about some of the things that are going on in the world of old-time radio this week. Same time, same station has been recorded already, and you may have heard this show already if you were listening to ACB Radio last week or yesterday USA earlier this week. It's our second week at the North Pole broadcasting via satellite. So on the show, we have Candy Matson, Red Skelton, Suspense, and The Cave, which is a great show. And finally, yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Red Mystery Matter. So all of those good radio shows. And next week for our New Year's show, we're not really doing anything New Year's related. We're doing a really good show that, as it turned out, on Yesterday USA, in which Perry Hantoon came by. And Perry talked about Christmas with Bing Crosby and played lots of good music. And Perry is a wealth of information about Crosby. I know a little, Larry knows a little, Walden knows a little, but Perry knows a lot. And so so if you join us next week on same time, same station, that's what we're going to run for the entire, well, for one of the hours. I don't know what the other hour is going to be yet. We haven't figured that out, but we will probably the day before we record it. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's too much time. An hour before we record it. So we'll see how that goes. In terms of other old-time radio stuff going on, we are doing daily marathons of old-time radio on Yesterday USA Blue and Red later in the evening, and also on the Spurdvec and Reps channels. So we're coming on. Walden was coming on around noon or whenever he felt like it from Thanksgiving onward. This week we're coming on at noon, California time, 3 on the East Coast, and we continue on playing Christmas old-time radio programs and talking among ourselves, and that goes till about 1 in the morning. So about 13 hours of programming every day, and we figure we'll transition from Christmas to New Year's sometime very early next week, maybe New Year's Day or the day after, and we'll go for another week or so of New Year's programming before we go back to the regular schedule. So you're welcome to tune in at any time. Lots of fun things going on. So those are the major things. Walden, any particular highlights that we want to hit for Yesterday USA?
Oh, well, Bob, you and I, literally be with us Friday, just our
right.
traditional get-together. Johnny and Helen will join us Saturday night and Christmas Eve. We're moving Michael Beale to the afternoon, about 4 o'clock Eastern, just to show you. Well, I've got church in the morning and family commitments in the afternoon, later in the day, so I figure move Michael in the afternoon and 7:30, Patricia and Johnny, Helen, and maybe Johnny Roy will join us for a while, Christmas Eve. And then Christmas Day, we'll play it a little bit loose. So John, Larry, and I have family commitments, so I don't know exactly what time we'll get together. It could be 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock. Johnny will help stream Christmas night because Johnny always got family commitments. So those are some of the things. I think, we're going to probably replay the Reps It's a Wonderful Life show tomorrow, right, John? If that's still on the,
yes.
on the board, says, right?
Yeah, we definitely will. It'll be played while Larry and I are out doing last-minute Christmas Day shopping for food for the get-together. So it'll probably run right around 6:30 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific, somewhere in that general area, maybe a few minutes before. And it's a four-hour show. So that should take us right up to the Friday night show.
Right.
So.
Then the following week, we'll have trivia, the all-night trivia thing from 9 to 3 in the morning. Johnny Hill and Patricia, after John, Rory, and Bob decide to go to bed. I will probably call Stuart Kanin. We traditionally have him on the 30th. That's the anniversary when he played the B, which would have been what?
1936, so about 87 years ago.
87 years ago.
Yeah.
And he still practices an hour and a half every day.
That's incredible.
Yeah,
an hour and a half every day, still practices.
Still sounds pretty good.
Stuart's going to be 98 next year in April. And so I'm planning to give him a call after Christmas and see if he'll join the tradition on the 30th. So that, and I think if we'll do it, we'll probably do it in the afternoon. You know, maybe around 3 or 4 o'clock or something. Yeah. That'd be my guess. So.
Mm-hmm.
And traditionally, we always play the full one-hour show, the Fred Allen show, from that day, December 30th, 1936. So that's generally been a tradition with us.
This is almost as good as the Cinnamon Bear tradition. Not quite, but...
Oh, God.
Every year, pretty much.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And he's just amazing. He's got great recall, great stories about, of course, Jack and Fred, but he also has a great story from the time when he played in front of Truman, Churchill, and Stalin when they were negotiating the end of World War II. And so as he and Mickey Rudy sitting out there in the pup tent waiting to be called in to perform, and they decided that Mickey's comedy might not fit, so Mickey had to be stuck out in the pup tent while Stuart came in and played the violin. So it's a great story. In 1945, when that happened to him, when he was like 18. But he had a remarkable play with John Williams, over 300 movies. Forrest Gump is one of the movies he played in. And he's, you know, concert violinist and played all over the world. So he's a pretty amazing guy.
Yes, he is. Yeah. I forgot to mention it on the air tonight. We played a One Man's Family show. And Barbara Fuller's still around and doing very well.
Yep.
We did the one from 47. Yeah, she's
102.
102, yeah.
Why sit there and watch these old movies and things, and that's she's still ticking along just fine. And I was talking to somebody yesterday, Peggy Weber. I talked to Peggy here a month ago, and she's fine at age 97. Getting ready to go in to record 6 new shows next year. So she wants my help to raise some money. But Peggy is another incredible person.
Yeah, she is.
Age 97. So. And we're looking forward. Her autobiography will be coming out fairly soon. So once that done, I think John Lurie and I would like to make the trip up and just talk to her in person about that once that is done. I mean, my gosh, you guys known her for almost 40 years, and I'm paying more than me. I ate with her at the first Spurvac convention in 1984.
That's
40 years ago. Years ago.
Yeah, and Peggy, we met her in 82 when we did that panel of six actors from CBS, and she was in the midst of talking to Jack Webb about coming to a Spurvac meeting, and about that time, of course, he had the heart attack and died. Otherwise, I'm sure we would have gotten him at some point. So
that was a big. How long did it take you to put that CBS mystery CBS panel together, John? Did you literally come up with the idea overnight and just start working on it?
I don't remember who came up with the idea. I do remember we called Parley Bear's agent, and he put us in touch with Parley. And from then on, Parley suggested some names, And we had contacts with some of them, but not all of them. So he helped us contact people. And we put the CBS panel together. And there were other people that were ill and couldn't be there, like Barney Phillips, who passed away shortly thereafter. And there's a couple more that we were talking about.
So I know that you guys have interviewed countless number of people. Is there anywhere, an interview with Jack Webb?
Not that I know of. There are a lot of people who were doing interviews at the time we did, John Dunning and Chuck Shaden. I don't think, I'm not aware of anybody who got Jack Webb on a oral sit down interview.
Okay.
I'd love to have heard it if anybody did, but I'm not aware of it. I don't think anybody in the hobby did because we'd have heard about it.
Okay. And Walden, do you know of any or no?
No, I was just thinking there might be something, a PR promotion for a film or something that's floating around. But I haven't looked on YouTube. I don't know, John. Maybe that's something we should look just to see if there's any promotional interview that he might have done for a film or a TV show or something. That's the only possibility I could think of. But
and the Dragnet books are about the best we can do right now that Hay did.
And I think part of the deal is about Jack died at a really young age.
Yeah, he was like 62. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so he probably was so active until the day he died that he probably just to break the time for him to sit down and just do a look back interview probably wasn't done. That probably was not on his mind.
I don't think he was one of those people that liked to look back very much. He was so active. He had things going on. At least from what I'm told, he didn't look back. Now, maybe he did privately. I don't know. But
this is Nikki.
Well, I'm asking we could have just got him to come over and talk about jazz. He was such a jazz.
Yeah, yeah,
well,
yeah. Go ahead, Nikki.
I just looked it up and there are 35 of Jack Webb podcast interviews on YouTube. And then there's some with where he discusses his film career and an interview record and all kinds of stuff. An evening with Jack Webb and just all kinds of stuff. So Google him.
Yeah,
Jack Webb audio interviews. And okay. Because, we can listen to the YouTube. We don't have to do it.
Sure. Good. Thank you for doing that.
You find YouTube. One time a few years ago, I Googled Cary Grant, and, at the end of his life, Cary Grant used to go to colleges and just talk about his career in front of students. And people have posted some of those on YouTube. So you just never know what's out there.
Well, can I say something else?
Sure.
I was listening to Jack Webb, and I didn't realize to begin with that he recorded in Chicago. But it caught my attention because he said, well, we were on Sedgwick under the L, and that was half a block away from where I lived my whole life until I came out here. And I thought, wow, when did he get to Chicago? And of course, he was in Chicago, but I thought that was really neat because they did use real names and real streets and real places. So that was fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I really associate Jack Webb's early radio career, maybe you're better than I, John, in San Francisco, because that's sort of where he cut his teeth, and that's where he made friends. And a lot of friends he made up in San Francisco, he hired them in Hollywood. And that was really an important thing for him, was his San Francisco connections.
Yeah, I agree. And a lot of those people had just wonderful memories of Jack Webb. And he was loyal to his friends, and they worked together for many years on different projects.
Well, he kept a lot of radio actors going on his TV shows.
Yeah, he sure did.
I hired him.
The Hollywood Stock Company he used all the time.
Oh, yeah, especially, what's his name, Stacey Harris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, and Virginia Gregg.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia Gregg.
Virginia Gregg, yeah, no, but Stacey Harris, I mean, he was on there quite a bit as well.
And Stacy Harris in the early days was Jack Armstrong out of Chicago before he came out to Hollywood. He was one of Jack Armstrongs.
I'm trying to remember how many recordings exist, and I'm not sure.
I don't know if we have any of that with him, per se, with Jack Armstrong.
Oh, do we have any interviews with Stacy Harris or no? No?
He died in the early 70s, so I don't think so.
No. But we could always check YouTube. Maybe somebody did.
Somebody might.
Maybe.
Like, for example, did anybody ever get a hold of Raymond Burr, talk about his radio days? I don't think so. John, do you?
Nobody in the hobby did. Somebody, you know, may have done that on a commercial basis, but nobody in the hobby did that I'm aware of.
Raymond Burr. Oh, I know. Yeah. Okay.
He was another member of Jack Webb's dot company on Dragnet.
He sure was.
Yeah.
In the early days,
And the other shows that Webb did.
What's his name? Ben Alexander. Is that what his name is?
Yeah.
Yeah, did anybody interview him?
Ben Alexander show with Barton Yarbrough, who played him. You know, he died in 51.
No, right. But yeah, no. I was talking about Frank Smith.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, Ben Alexander. You're right. He also died early. He died in 1969.
What? Wow, okay.
He of the radio actors, probably one of the wealthiest person there was. He actually in L.A. owned car dealership, gasoline stations. He didn't really need to work, but he loved working with Jack Webb. He kept it going. But he was a businessman who made a lot of money in cars and selling cars and selling gas.
But I don't know of any interviews that were done unless somebody outside the hobby did them. But
maybe so. Yeah.
But somebody else we can look up on YouTube and we'll see.
Yeah. And another person I had in mind was Bill Boyd, if anybody did anything with him.
Boyd died in 72. I think Larry said once William made a lot of that money on the hop on Cassidy, he's somewhat retired at that point. Is that what you've heard, John? He pretty much once he cashed in, that was it.
And I don't know if anybody interviewed him.
His wife was very active. I tried to chase her down, and she was still running exercise programs at hospitals into her 90s, and I never could find a good connection. But she noticed the William Boyd Estate always licensed almost everything. They were very active.
Did he have any children?
I don't know if he had. I don't know. I never have looked that up.
And Ben Alexander was amazing with the accents that he could do, with the voices that he could do. Mm-hmm. I think on One Man's Family, he played Nicholas, and I can't think of the other person. Two or three other people.
He all played Bachelor Ben on The Great Gildersleeve, too.
Right.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And he was also the announcer for Dee Martin and Jerry Lewis for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a versatile actor.
Yeah.
What about, did anybody ever interview either radio or TV, either of the Cisco kids?
Jack Mather was not around. Yeah, he died before we got active interviewing people. So I'm not aware of anybody who interviewed him.
What about
Harry Lang, the poo played Poster, died in New York City.
Right. No. Well, late 50s, 58, 59, I believe it was. What about what's his name? Reynaldo Duncan.
Reynaldo Duncan? No, nobody. Not that I'm aware of. Now, some of these people may have been interviewed for AFTRA or some of the guilds, and sometimes they kept private interviews, which weren't released to the public.
We've noticed there is and you can find a lot of these on YouTube. The TV Academy has recorded a ton of interviews, and these are not some of these run 2-3 hours long. I think John was downloading a few of them, and there's probably a lot more for us to
oh, there are. Out. There are.
You know.
And they talk about the entire career, not just television, but radio and everything. And so there's a lot to look at. And I got sidetracked and haven't finished that project, but I've downloaded quite a few.
And I want to tell people that if they have a chance to listen to the either the suspense or the escape version of The Cave, now I think YUSA has been playing the suspense one.
Yeah.
The Cave is so good. It's such a fantasy.
Isn't Dick Olson the show?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I remember. Yeah.
He's kind of the star.
Mm-hmm.
Not kind of, he is the star.
So we've done the suspense. We could go grab the escape one and play it.
It was interesting. Do you notice, John, the Radio City Playhouse you just played? It's the same, almost the same script, but the Lights Out script about 10 years earlier.
Well, I'm not surprised because Willis Cooper wrote it.
Yeah.
So we'll have to try and, I don't like the copy we have. I don't know whether a better one exists.
Yeah,
I'd
I
like
think
to find
it.
A better one of what now?
A Radio City Playhouse that I just played over on Yesterday USA.
Mm, okay.
The commercials were clipped, so I'd like to maybe I've got an upgrade and didn't know it at the time. I don't know.
Okay.
Nikki has a question.
Go right ahead.
When you're listening to something and you hear these blips, is that because it's an old one or is that in the transmission? Because I'm never quite sure.
Well, a lot of times it's in the transmission.
Okay.
It just depends upon sometimes who recorded the show.
Mm-hmm.
If it comes from original discs, you shouldn't hear that at all.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Because yeah, I know in the Mission District... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sometimes if it's an MP3, it depends when the MP3 was done. In the early days, a lot of the MP3s in the 90s were not done correctly. And if we accidentally played some of those will have pickups and things like that.
Okay, because these are like little blips, but I live in the Mission in San Francisco, and we're the first ones to get browned out. You know, they reduce our power, so I don't usually have trouble on Zoom, but on the well-connected Zoom platform, which is Aviento, it kicks me off all the time.
Hmm.
Crazy. Anyway, but thank you very much. That's good to know.
Because
if I hear a blip, I'll go look for it somewhere else and see what happens.
Hi, Doc. Good to see you, sir.
Hi, Rick. Good morning. I had to move the keyboard.
Good. Yeah, there you go. Hi, partner. How are you?
Pretty good. Is Brad listening?
Brad is not here, sir. No.
Okay, then I won't tell him that. Well, then, thanks, Michael, for fixing my computer problems.
Well, I don't know what I did, but okay, sure.
Always do that. Just before the marathon, I was talking to Brad that I couldn't get my audio player to work. A couple other things weren't working. And we were debating about whether the machine was going bad. 2 days later, all of a sudden it fixed itself. And I know it doesn't fix itself, so you must have fixed it because we had everything ready for the marathon.
I didn't do it, but okay, whatever, sure.
Michael, you never do it.
Good evening, your rottenness.
Hey, my joniness.
Anyway.
Anyway. I think, by the way, Brad is thinking about playing some stuff here Christmas Eve, right, John? If I think some audio description movies or something, we were talking.
He was talking about that, yeah.
Yeah, he threw that out there, but I don't know if he's going to do it. It's up to him.
Hope that on New Year's Eve, somebody's going to play Guy Lombardo's "Auld Lang Syne."
I'm going to play Dead.
Yeah, that shouldn't be a problem.
Who's going to play the Christmas story of Dragnet, the little red wagon?
Ah, the baby Jesus one, huh?
Yes, I love that. Yep. I think it's the first time I ever heard of that, I think, was when Dragnet first came on. And I don't know, when did Dragnet start on the radio? I must have been about 10.
49.
Okay, I was 5 years old, 4 years old. I remember listening to it when I was very young.
That wasn't on the first year because the first year the Christmas show was Gun for Christmas.
Right, for Christmas, yeah.
I think the Baby Jesus one was like 53 or so, yeah. I think.
Right.
That sounds right. Because it was also on TV. It was It was sort of simulcast, but it wasn't.
I don't know. That was weird. I always think that the radio version of that was grabbed from the TV because it sounds big time TV.
Yeah, it does.
Well, Johnny Holmes just gave us one with commercial, so maybe we should play that one, Johnny. I think Johnny Box.
We can do that, yeah. I'll have to look for it. I haven't had a chance to check it, but I can.
That's a good show, though.
We are about 4 minutes away from Walden, so who's playing?
I'll go turn on the screen share.
Are you doing it, Max?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So we got about 4 minutes to talk, and then we'll hear from Walden.
Okay. Are you going to stick around, Walden?
Nope. Dinner will be cooking, so I will be sneaking out.
What are you having for dinner, sir?
Well, Mom just made a hot chocolate right now, so we've been sipping away on hot chocolate.
Yesterday, USA interviews Joe Stafford when it stopped.
So I don't know yet what we're having for dinner. But the last couple of nights, what she's serving us is a baked potato with sloppy Joe on top of it.
That's good.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Not bad.
Mm. That hot chocolate sounds like the best thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you
baked
potato in it.
It was just that kind of weather, you know, it's really cold at 57 degrees here, you know, so you have to warm up.
Did you just say a hot chocolate with baked potato in it, Rick?
You dip your baked potato in the hot chocolate.
You weirdo. That's gross. Anyway.
Fall off.
Hi, Joy. Good to see you.
Hi, Joy.
Hi, Joy.
Well, my favorite sandwich is peanut butter and mayonnaise and lettuce on bread.
Oh, my God. What the? What is it with you people?
Just a second.
I know people do that.
Hi there, Joy. Well, how you doing?
It's sort of like, but some people don't understand. For example, for lunch, it's grilled cheese with ketchup. You know, now some people, that must be a Midwestern thing. Because some people on the East Coast don't understand.
Well, I never did that, and I was born in Chicago. That sounds kind of gross.
So my screen share is on, eh, Michael?
Yes, sir. Uh-huh.
Yep. Okay, and I was just going to ask Joy, did I hear Joy's in here?
Correct, she is in here.
Hey, Joy, I just wondered if you got the files okay.
I just talking to the computer here, Ron. I don't need.
Yeah, you're coming.
Joy.
We can hear you. We can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, I just got finished with the plot to Overthrow Christmas, so I've only got one more show to do. But I figured I had to come into the chat room to listen.
Okay. Well, yeah, we can hear you fine. You're good.
Thank you for letting me know. Thank you for helping out and everything. Glad you got everything okay.
Grilled cheese and ketchup. Yes, that's what we're
thinking. Yeah, because I cannot play on Saturday. I'm leaving. I'm busy from tomorrow till, the 27th.
All right, that's fine. Somebody,
I won't be able to make the meeting either.
Somebody will cover for you, don't worry.
Yeah, I won't be able to make the MSS meeting either because I'm busy.
Okay,
Thank you.
About a minute, 18 seconds away from Walden.
Yep.
Okay. So. I checked Matt's show that we've delayed. And I think it'll work. It's a Christmas show, but it's a BBC one, and actually it's very good. So okay. I think it'll fly.
Okay, that's fine, Doc. Thank you, Doc, for keeping us posted on that.
Yeah, right.
love you, Doc.
Well, I was just afraid about the teaser. I think I'll just reissue the teaser. In fact, you may still have a copy of it, Michael, and then I'll throw it back at you.
Yeah, throw it back at me. Just don't hit me in the head with it.
Yeah. So I don't think the Christmas intro or whatever that in the teaser will hurt things. It's a Santa Claus leftover, you know.
Yeah.
But it's at the end. It's in the Christmas season. It's appropriate. It's not, you know.
All right. So, John, do you want to do the muting for everybody, or you want me to take care of that? Or what do you
No, I want you to take care of that. We are 5 seconds away. So might as well mute everybody and then we'll go to Max. And
all right, Maxwell, so be ready, buddy. Here we go.
Okay,
I'm going to mute everybody right now.
Oh, I hate to turn that off. That is such good music at this wonderful time in our life, the Christmas season. And this is a time when we look back and remember the true meaning of Christmas. And every now and then we exchange a gift. And that's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to exchange gifts. And we have brought along a wonderful gift to all the Yesterday USA listeners. And they're going to be hard-pressed to match this gift. But I'll tell you what. I'll tell you how you can do it. Just keep supporting Yesterday USA and believing in what we do. And I think everyone will be even. And to introduce our wonderful Christmas present and to get things started off is a man who is a present himself. He's the kind of guy that radio station managers lay awake at night and dream of having. And goodness gracious, we've got him here, and we are so thankful for him. And if he doesn't know who I'm talking about, I'm sure everyone else does. Walden Hughes.
I have no clue, Bill.
Walden, stand up and take a bow, my boy. And thank you for stuffing our stocking so full this Christmas season with all the wonderful celebrity guests that you've arranged. And you've outdone yourself again tonight. And I'll just let you tell us how you've done that.
Sure. Well, last weekend we had Connie Haynes on our show. And she said that Joe Stafford really was her big sister all those years with Tommy Dorsey. So, I might as well bring on Connie Haynes' big sister, Joe Stafford. Merry Christmas, Joe.
Merry Christmas to you all, too.
Well, I think what we ought to do for our listeners is talk about your record company and your website first.
Sure.
That way they can at least start looking for some Christmas items if it's not too late, or at least go to their stores and pick up some their great stuff.
Walden, we've got a couple, we've got a little bit of technical difficulties here. Let me just see what I can do to correct those, and I think I just did, so carry on.
Good job. Joe, how did the Corinthian Records all come about?
Well, it started, really, kind of crept up on us. Paul had some religious music that he'd written, a couple of hymns, and of course, he wrote a whole mass in Gregorian style, and he had a couple of those hymns that he wanted to get recorded, and so of course I wanted to do them, and I recorded them for him, and they put together an album of some religious songs, and then thinking about what we call this record, this label, we went to one of our favorite biblical things, which is St. Paul and the Corinthians, the love being, you know, hope, love, and charity. And so that's where the Corinthian name came from.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, now, people, you have it online.
Mm-hmm.
We have a link from our website to yours, and that way people can find us. And you have so much good stuff on this website.
Oh, we have quite a library now, because when I left Columbia Records, we had a lawsuit going, and as part of the settlement, I got all my masters. I own all my Columbia masters.
That is so real.
And when we got those, that's when Paul decided to expand Corinthian, and we started putting my stuff out on Corinthian. And then we extended even more. We now lease some things from Capitol that I did, and so we have, I don't know, we must have, I don't even know the count of how many albums we've got. But it's a nice little record company, and Tim now runs it very well,
right,
my son. And it's a we enjoy doing it.
Well, you know what? I think one of the cute things is the interview you have with Darlene and Jonathan on the website. It's like a great article.
That was fun to do.
I think probably the first thing I want to talk about before, I'm going to really want to talk about your radio career mostly.
Uh-huh.
But I think with most people, probably all want to know, how did your career really get started?
Well, I tell you, I had it, I think, kind of easy, because I had two older sisters, Chris and Pauline, who were in radio when I was still a kid in school.
Oh,
they,
my.
They were singers. And they worked on the local radio station in Long Beach, California. They did everything. It was one of, in those days, you sang and you acted in little playlets. You did a little bit of everything. And they were, so they were already in the business while I was, as I say, while I was still a kid in school. And when I got out of high school, it was just a natural thing to join them because we had sung together, you know, at home all the time. And that was the, we were the Stafford Sisters, very original name. That was my start in the business. But they had really done all the knocking on the doors before I joined them. So it was kind of an easy entrance for me.
So what was probably your first radio experience? You remember that?
The first what?
Radio. What was the first radio show you actually did?
I guess it would have been after I joined my sisters. We did a lot of work with a kind of a country group called the Crockett Family. They were a very talented family, mostly country music, and they had an hour show, a 1 hour show, 5 nights a week on KNX locally here on KNX, and I guess that was my first. Then after that, my sisters and I had our own radio show on KHJ, which was national radio then.
That had been on the Don Lee Network, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we were on a show that was a coast-to-coast show called California Melodies, and that was from KHJ.
Was that also country, or was that sort of moving?
No, that was regular pop music.
Uh-huh.
That's when I had my first solo on that show on California Melodies. I sang Where or When. That was the first solo I did on national radio.
Oh my. Oh my. Well, what would it be like a rehearsal schedule? Would you sort of have an idea before you even walked into the studio? I mean, I talked to some singers and they had no clue until they stepped in, or what was sort of like your routine?
Oh no, ours would be planned, because I don't know how you would go in to do a 15-minute show without knowing what you were going to do. No, ours were all, we, you know, the girls and I rehearsed and I did the arrangements, and no, we'd know what the whole 15 minutes was going to do before we went in the studio.
Mm-hmm. Then how did the Pied Pipers really all start?
Well, that started on we got to know each other at least. There was a motion picture made out here called, out at 20th Century Fox, called Alexander's Ragtime Band.
With Alice Faye.
Right, and Tyrone Power.
Yeah.
And I guess every vocal group in Los Angeles was on the call, because there was a lot of music, and there must have been, 30 or 40 singers, but they mostly were made up of groups that were all called, and we all sang together. The Stafford Sisters was one of the groups. Another group was called, with three boys, the Three Rhythm Kings. And another group was four boys called the Four Esquires. And we were all on this call, and it went on for weeks. And so the Four Esquires, the Three Rhythm Kings, and I just started fooling around on the soundstage between working. You do a lot of sitting around on motion pictures. And we just started fooling around together, just, you know, like a jam session.
Mm-hmm.
And so that there were eight of us to begin with, and that was the original Pied Piper group that I finally, when I left my sisters and joined them, and I was the only girl. There were seven boys and myself. But we met on that call at 20th Century Fox, and that's how we all met and started, you know, singing together.
Mm-hmm. Did the Pied Pipers before Tommy Dorsey, did they do local radio or local?
Yeah, well, we did the original Pied Pipers, the big group, the group of eight. We did some guest shots on Tommy's radio show. We weren't part of his organization. We were just guests on his, he had a weekly radio show, I think, for Raleigh Cool Cigarettes. And we did about 9 or 10 guest shots on that show. And that's when Tommy first heard us. And then after that, we kind of starved for about 6 months or so. And gradually the group of guys dropped out until finally we were a quartet. And three boys and myself from the original group. And we were just hanging around out here in California, not doing very well at all. And I got this call one afternoon to call operator something 92 in Chicago, which mystified me as I didn't know anybody in Chicago, but I made the call, and it was Tommy. And he said, I would like a group. He said, I can't use eight, but I'd like a quartet with you singing lead. And I said, well, as a matter of fact, as of now, today, that's what the Pipers are. And we joined Tommy's band in December of 1939.
That beautiful voice you're hearing and enjoying is that of Miss Jo Stafford. My name is Bill Bragg. I'm in Richardson, Texas, just north of Dallas. Miss Stafford is at her lovely home. Walden is on the West Coast out in California. And we don't know where you are, you the listener, so we'd like to find out where you are and find out what you might have to say to Miss Jo Stafford. We invite all calls, one or perhaps two questions. No personal questions, please, and no public performances. But do call in, and we guarantee that everyone who does call in will get to talk to Miss Jo Stafford live in person. Our telephone number is 972-889-TALK. That's 972-889-TALK, and we'll be happy to turn the floor over to you and let you ask your question of Miss Jo Stafford. I'll have a question right now, if I might just kind of poke it in here in between Walton's fine questions. Miss Stafford, is it possible for someone to learn how to sing, or do you have to be born with that? I'm so hoping you'll say, yeah, there's a school you can go to, and if so, say the name real slow so I can write it down, because I'd love to be a singer, and I'm afraid that I wasn't born with it.
Well, I tell you, you have to have something born. You can improve on it and strengthen it and help it along, but there has to be something there to start with. You can't just be tone deaf and learn how to sing. There has to be some quality there that you're born with. That's a gift.
Well, I'll tell you what, Miss Stafford, I'll continue to pray for that gift then, because it hasn't arrived yet. It hasn't arrived yet, but I'll tell you something that has arrived, and that is a telephone call. It's a question from Art, who is in San Luis Obispo, California. So, Art, say hello to Miss Jo Stafford.
Hello, Miss.
Hello, Art.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Fine. I'm planning to spend the whole evening listening to talk about your wonderful career, but I wanted to jump in with a question that Walden will, I'm sure, get to later, but I'm dying to hear the answer to it.
Uh-huh.
And that is your Jonathan and Darlene Edwards period. I couldn't believe I was in the Navy in the late 50s. I came back from Far East, and someone said, I want to play this record. And I said, what in the name of heaven is that? And they told me, and I said, good musicians can't deliberately do that. It must drive them crazy. Anyway, we're back in 1939. I don't want you to stop. I'm going to sit here until midnight, California time. But when you get around to the late 50s, please tell us about that.
Sure.
Thank you.
Art, thank you for calling. Art in San Luis Obispo, California. Well, guys, I'll turn it back over to Walden now and wait for the phone to continue to ring. 972-889-TALK. Walden, if you want to address that now or save it for later, either way, I don't think we're going to lose Art.
I think for Art's sake, we might as well break into the Darlene story now. Is that okay with you, Jill?
Sure.
But how did that all come about, and maybe some funny stories behind it?
Well, Jonathan was born first. For years, many, many years, Paul had this version of Stardust that he used to, you know, at parties just for fun. He would go to the piano and do this horrible rendition of Stardust. A la Jonathan. And it was always, you know, he had many fans. Jeannie Martin, Dean's wife, and that was the first thing she wanted to hear. And a lot of people, Jack Benny was a big fan. He loved it. And so it was the thing that Paul, as I say, Paul did just for fun. And at one point, the Columbia Records were having a big convention in Key West, of all the places. And after some of the business meetings, they all went over to a little bar to have a drink. And there was a piano player there who was pretty close to Jonathan. And, I mean, you know, there are not many great piano players living in Key West. So, anyway, after the fellow finished his work and left for the night, Paul went over and did this version of that he had of Stardust. And some of the company guys there, George Avakian and Irving Townsend from Columbia Records, said, you got to make an album of this stuff. And, you know, Paul said, you know, the thing, you got to be kidding. No, we're not kidding. You really should do an album, a comedy album of this. And so they said, you know, really think about it and do an album. And so on the way home, flying home on the plane, Paul got cold feet and he thought, you know, I can't go into this alone. I've got to have a partner. So that's when Darlene was born. And so we just worked up these songs and made the album. And it led, I think we finally made five albums of the Jonathan and Darlene. But that's the way they came about. It was just a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun doing it.
Well, did Darlene share her Grammy with you? I mean, how did that all come about? Did Darlene share her Grammy with you? I know she won a Grammy, didn't she?
Jonathan and Darlene won a Grammy.
Right.
Yes.
So I want to know, do they ever share it with you? I mean,
well, yes, they let it put it on our. It's on our mantelpiece. they let us look at it.
Oh, that's nice of them.
Yeah, they're nice kids.
How fast did it take you to come up with the name Darlene? I mean.
I just think it's a darling name.
And how about Port Trenton, New Jersey? How did that get picked?
I think that's where Jonathan decided he was from. And so naturally, you know, he and Darlene were high school sweethearts.
Yeah.
So she was from there, too. It's a nice, folksy place.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we should go back to 1939.
Okay.
And, now, did you join? You said you joined Dorsey in Chicago.
Uh huh.
Was it the first thing you did? Was it a hotel? Was it a band remote? You recall maybe the first thing in Chicago?
Where they were playing?
Uh huh.
They were playing the Palmer House.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, in Chicago when we joined.
Now, would it probably done? You probably done several band remotes in Chicago before you had gone ahead and moved on to the next city or whatever.
Well, we had, I think Tommy had, two or three more weeks at the Palmer House. Mm-hmm. And then our next stop was a theater in Milwaukee. I think it was Milwaukee was our next stop. And that's where Sinatra joined the band.
Now, was Connie already part of the band, or did she join later?
She joined after we did. Not too long after, but it was after we joined. We were there first, and then Connie and Frank came. I forget if Connie became... No, I guess Connie came after Frank.
Right.
A little bit after Frank. Although they had known each other. They were both with Harry James.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, now was Paul already part of, with Dorsey at the time, or did he join... later?
Oh, Paul had been with Dorsey since 1936.
Okay.
And, but when we joined in December 39, Paul left the band about 2 weeks after that and came to California to work with Dinah Shore.
Probably on her radio series, I imagine.
Yeah, and so all the time that we were with Dorsey, we saw Paul, you know, passing in the night, and whenever we were in the same city, we'd visit. But he was out. He came to California and was living out here.
Well, now wasn't Axel short off?
Axe was still with Tommy, yeah.
Okay, and then Nelson Riddle would have been with Tommy. And
who?
Nelson Riddle.
That was Nelson was with Tommy after we left.
Got ya. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a bunch. It's amazing how many people owed a success to Tommy Dorsey one way or another. I mean,
Tommy was very kind to artists. He was so sure of himself professionally that he could afford to give you plenty of time and recognition. And he was very generous to artists.
Now, what about the song "I Never Smile Again"? Is there a nice story behind that?
Well, it's the story you always hear is
right.
It's a true story. It was written by this girl, Ruth Lowe, who had lost her husband, and she wrote the song for him. I think she was a Canadian. And so that's, she brought the, I don't know how she met Tommy, but she brought the song to Tommy, and of course he gave it to Frank and the Pipers.
You recall where you were when Pearl Harbor with Mom?
We were out here, as a matter of fact. We were in California playing, I guess we were playing the Palladium. Well, we were, because the Palladium opened,
I think 1940, I think.
The Dorsey Band opened it.
Right.
We were the first band in there, and it was Halloween Eve of 1940. So we were playing the Palladium at the time of Pearl Harbor. We were out out here.
Now, how do you wind up being the lead female singer? Was it because Connie had left the band? How did that all come about?
Well, after Connie left the band, Tommy just never hired another girl singer, and I just sort of took over the library as a solo singer.
How do you...
I had done some solos.
Right.
While Connie was still with the band. So when she left, he just never rehired anybody else.
Then, after you left Tommy,
mm-hmm.
I remember that you went ahead and the Pied Pipers came back and stayed out here in California.
Yeah, we were out in our homes were here to begin with, you know, originally. Mm-hmm. So it was just natural to come back to Los Angeles, yeah. And we did a lot of, by that time, we had a pretty good name going for us for the, you know, the 3 years with Dorsey. And we did a lot of radio work, a lot of guest shots. And I remember we did a road tour, did some, for about 7 months, we traveled and did theaters. And then back to California, and then that's when we signed with Capitol Records.
I know Johnny Mercer also had his own radio show, and I know you did a lot on his radio show at the same time.
John was John used to come and see us when we were with Dorsey, whenever he was in New York or we were out here. He would always come to see the band, and I had been a fan of his since when he was with Paul Whiteman. And so I used to always, you know, get together with him and talk because I was such a fan.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to us, he said, if you ever leave the band, give me a call because we're starting a new record company, and I'd like to have the Pipers, and I'd like to have Joe Stafford sign up to make records for this new company. So after we came in off of our tours that we did, we got in touch with him, and then he signed the Pipers and me to record for Capitol. And then after that, of course, he had his own radio show, and we were on with him. He had always had the Pipers and had me on with him.
What kind of guy was he? Was he an easygoing kind of guy to work for?
To work with. He was wonderful to work with. Just great, you know, because he was a musician and singer himself.
Right.
And so he was, we had a great, great family of people there at Capitol Records in the early days. They were all nice people, all great to work with. Of course, Paul was there. And John was a real, he was a pixie is what he was. Pixie from Dixie, they called him.
From Georgia, yeah.
Yeah.
How did your radio series, how did that actually come about?
The radio what?
Your radio show with Chesterfield.
John, we did it first with John, had his Chesterfield Music Shop.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 15-minute five nights a week, and then John left. That show ended, and Perry Como took it up in New York, and had the same 15 minutes five nights a week. And I went back east at that point. I had left the Pipers to go on my own. I had a guy by the name of Mike Neidorf, who was my manager and mentor, and he said, you know. I think you can really make something out of a career, but I don't think you can do it and stay with the Pipers. And as much as I love group singing, and well, it's still my favorite, but I left the Pipers and went on my own, and part of it was going to New York, too. I played a nightclub and did a guest shot on with Perry on the Chesterfield Supper Club. And then after that, I don't know how long after that, the Chesterfield Company decided they wanted me on, and so I did Tuesday and Thursday nights. Perry did Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And that was my start with the Chesterfield. I was with them for about 6 years, I guess.
What kind of schedule would you have kept during that time? I mean, would it allow preparation to produce a 15-minute radio show for yourself?
Well, not a whole lot, because I think 15 minutes you had, it was a matter of four songs. And we would just have a session maybe once every 2 weeks and map out 2 weeks of shows. Mm-hmm. And you had plenty of good songs in those days to work with.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We might plan, you know, well, maybe not 2 weeks. Maybe we'd plan a whole week ahead of, which was, you know, it was about, took about 20 songs, and there was not too much. See, we had a lot of movie people on that sometimes didn't really perform that much. You'd have a little dialogue with
right.
them. I'm trying to think madly. Well, of course, I had some singers on that I liked. I like Dick Hames I had on and Gordon McRae. I like the singers. And Peggy Lee.
Sure.
I don't think I ever had Dinah on, although I did Dinah's guest on Dinah. But we were both working so much, it was hard to do guests.
How about the movie personalities? Were there some that you really look forward to having you on the show, or a guy I can't to meet for the first time? Were there anybody?
Let me see. It's, you know, it's too long ago.
Yep, I know it's a hard...
Really, it's just too long ago, I can't...
No problem.
Can't remember that well.
How about, were there any funny, any funny miscues or any funny bloopers on the air? Do you recall anything like that? You know, somebody dropping their script something.
Well, we had for a while, we had some gimmick we had on that entailed me talking on the phone to people. And this was in the early days of this kind of a operation. And I had several nights of talking to myself where there was absolutely no one on the other end. And I just had to fake the whole thing because there's just whoever was supposed to be there wasn't getting through.
Oh, my.
So, but, you know, things like that happen. But nothing in the catastrophe zone ever took place, I don't think.
And we're doing pretty good here tonight, Ms. Stafford, as well. And we now have Radio Shack, so our phone system works quite well.
Well, good.
So let me remind our listeners of our telephone number, 972-889-TALK. That's 972-889-TALK. A quick apology. We missed one or two golden words a moment ago when our automation system took over and did what it normally does at this time because we aren't usually on. But I'm here to tell you we have a complete, clean copy that will be made available in the not-too-distant future, so no harm done there. I tell you, I am always so excited when we have someone like Miss Jo Stafford on, and tonight is no exception, and I must do something, Miss Stafford,
mm-hmm.
that I've never done before when we had a celebrity guest on, but I must ask for forgiveness,
mm-hmm.
and I actually, what I really need to do is I really need to just bare my soul here. And I want to do it to you and ask for forgiveness tonight because I committed a sin many years ago, and it's all your fault.
Oh, good heavens.
And I'd like to ask for public forgiveness at this time. When I was, I must have been in about the fourth or fifth grade. I'm just turned 55 a couple of days ago. In fact, we're having our birthday dinner tonight.
Oh, good.
And I was in about the third or fourth grade, and it was when stereo first came out. And you remember those little stereo record players? Then they had the little detachable speakers,
mm-hmm.
and they'd fold up like a suitcase, you know. And you'd open them up, and then the speakers would come off, would come unhooked, and you could stretch them out across the room. And when you'd buy those, well, they'd give you a supply of records free, usually. And usually you didn't really buy a good brand, you bought the one that you got the most free records with. You know, to heck with a good Columbia or an RCA. And, you know, it was the question you asked was, how many free records do I get? And it seemed like I got 29 free records with this. And Mother bought it at a drugstore. And we got it home, and we hooked it up, and it played so-so. And there was all kinds of problems with it. And the more we messed with it, the worse it got. And finally, you know, I was crying and whining, you know, my Christmas is ruined. My record player won't play. And so Mother said, finally, she said, I've had enough of this. Pack up those darn records, and let's pack up the stereo, and let's take it back and get our money back. Well, of course, even though the thing wasn't performing just perfectly, there was one record that I absolutely fell in love with, and it sounded great even on a broken phonograph, and that was, I think it was a Columbia. It was the St. Louis Blues.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that? You remember that when you did that on Columbia? It was a 45, St. Louis Blues.
I sure do.
And I went in, I told Mama, I says, okay, Mama, I'll go get the records. And I gathered up all of the records, Miss Stafford, except one.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the St. Louis Blues. It was on a white label with red printing. I remember it well. I still have it.
And
we took it all back, and we never told them that we kept one of the records. And so if you'll say it's okay, Bill, well, then it'll probably be okay.
It's okay. One of my favorite arrangements of Paul's.
Aww. Oh, and let me tell you, folks, if you ever get a chance to hear that, I mean, this lady does it better than Louis. I'm here to tell you. I mean, I bet Louis just trembles in his boots every time he heard that song because, oh, that was so good.
That was one of my favorites.
Mine, too. All right, I bet we have probably a favorite person here on the telephone. You never know who's there. We'll just answer this one without having checked to see who's there. What is your name, caller?
Hi, Bill. This is Keith Moore in Miami Shores, Florida. And hi, Miss Jo Stafford. I really enjoy your song so much.
Thank you very much.
I have one request or one song that I like so much that you did, and I was working at a radio station at the time, and it's called You Belong to Me.
Oh, yeah.
And I have, as Bill says, I have a white label radio station copy, 78.
No kidding.
And I have it framed. And I just wanted to call. How did you come up with the title, and how did you come up to do that song? Because it was so pretty, and it just was so enjoyable.
Well, I tell you, it was one of those things that we had a record date coming up. We had three sides picked, and we had this one side that was in those days. You had an A side and a B side. The A side was the one that everyone thought would. Had possibilities of taking off and being a hit, but we needed a backside for that. And Paul came, he said, I got a song that I really think is a good song. And he said, we need a backside for this record. And he played the song for me, and I loved it. And we made it, and nobody ever heard the A side. They just played You Belong to Me. I don't even know what the other side was.
No, I'd have to take it out of the frame to look because I don't know myself.
I haven't the faintest notion. But anyway, the side that was supposed to be the hit was never heard from again.
I'll tell you, I just enjoyed that song, and the listeners that I had really enjoyed it. I think I wore out more 78 records of that song than I can remember.
Well, it's a good piece of music.
Well, I sure did enjoy it. Miss Stafford, it's been nice talking to you, and I know there's other people who'd like to say something, so I'll just listen to the rest of the interview.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for letting me talk to you.
Yes, sir, and thank you, my friend, for that kind email you sent, and I'll be reading that here in a little while. 972-889-TALK is our telephone number. Again, that's 972-889-TALK, and wow, what a great question and so well put. Oh, we have the nicest listeners, Miss Stafford, and it's so neat that we can just sit here and visit with one another, and just like we were long-lost friends. And that's you're so kind to give us of your time, and we appreciate that. Walden?
Pleasure.
Well, Bill, I have an email from Dr. Dwayne Kilstrip out of Texas, and he was so disappointed that he wasn't going to be able to be home tonight to hear the show. So he wanted me to ask Joe about Cinderella G. Stump. Well,
another one of my personalities. The three faces of Joe. Well, Cinderella came about, again, like a lot of those things, quite accidentally. As I mentioned in the earlier part of the show, part of my early career was country music. And so I knew a lot of people from that part of show business. And I was up at Capitol Records one afternoon picking out some songs to record. And I'd finished with it and was walking down the hall on my way out. And I heard somebody say, "Now there goes a gal that could do it." So I stopped and looked in the room and to see who was speaking of me. And it was Country Washburn, who was a fellow I had known from our country music days very well, very talented man. And he was in there with Red Ingles' group, and they were rehearsing this piece of music they were supposed to record the next night. And they were all a little panicky because the girl that was supposed to do it had skipped town. She'd walked out on them. So anyway, they were without a singer to do this silly arrangement that country'd made of Temptation. And I said, "Well, you know, let me hear it." So they ran it down for me, and I thought it was a hoot. And so I said, "You know, because I'd love to do it. Let's rehearse it and do it." And that's the way it came about, just by accident.
One take, or how many? You recall how many takes it took to do that?
I think we only did about three.
Yeah.
And as a, usually when you do three takes, you use the first one anyway.
Oh, well, now, after you joined Columbia, didn't mm-hmm. you also work for Voice of America Radio?
No, I did a lot of Voice of America's. Yeah.
How did that all come about? Are there any stories behind that?
Well, actually, they contacted me to do them, and I was glad to do them because they're broadcast over the whole world, and I don't know how many I did, but I worked several years for them. I did a lot of shows for them, but they contacted me to do them.
Oh, Radio Luxembourg and all those.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was just noticing also, I guess I better, we'll talk a little bit here about your TV show here. How did that all come about?
The TV show?
Uh-huh.
Well, TV came along. That's how it came
right.
about.
Right.
And it was just one of those things that, you know, if you're in the business, you had to get into it. And I got that little 15-minute show, which we did for a couple of years. And outside of that, I did, guest shots on every imaginable show. But I loved doing the little 15-minute TV show. That was fun to do. I enjoyed that.
I know Bing Crosby avoided TV for such a long time.
Yeah. Well, I think I avoided it. I guess I was 54. It was a couple of years after music came into TV, and then of course, in the mid 50s or the late 50s, the regular you'd get hour shows once a week, but the little 15-minute shows went out of style. The network changed the whole format, and then they went to hours. And most of the music shows were hour. Of course, now there are none.
No, they're completely. Any live? Naturally, been all live. Were there any disasters, like somebody dropping the charts or the notes or anything like that? In particular, I know Patty Page was telling us that she could recall people dropping things while she was on live TV, and it would get crack her up completely, that she couldn't continue, you know.
No one ever got me so I couldn't continue. They came close, but I usually could kind of block them out. No, I don't remember having any bad things happening to me.
Right. What about your Christmas, your TV show in England? How did that all come about?
Well, it was just offered to me. ITV, I had known the Grade Brothers since I played the Palladium, their London Palladium in 1952, and it's when I met them first. And then they started this TV network and asked me to come over to do some, I guess I did about 11-hour shows over there in the summer of 61. And that was a lot of fun. It had a good band, Jack Parnell's band. They had some good singers. We made some good music. As a matter of fact, Rosemary Clooney was one of my guests there, and she had never seen the show that she did with me, and a couple of weeks ago, I had her, she came over for dinner, and we watched the show, and it was the first time she'd seen it in all those years. But I enjoyed doing that. That was fun.
What about, well, I guess we better talk about some of your other records. I think that if now I'm going to get calls after you left, people will start wondering why I haven't talked about, especially your stuff you did with Gordon McRae. That was so nice.
I did a lot with Gordon at Capitol, and we had, we had a million seller with Whispering Hope.
Right.
It was sold a million, and I never knew one person that bought it. But somewhere out there, a million folks bought it. And, yeah, I did quite a lot of work with Gordon. He was a pleasure to work with because he was a real pro, real professional. And
My darling.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
How about Shrimp Boat? Is there a story behind how that came about?
Well, it came about because Paul wrote it. And,
right.
And so it was around the house here, and I thought it was a good piece of material. And he wrote it with John Howard, I think. Howard was his last name. And I thought it was a wonderful piece of material. Good, fun to sing with the slow ballad verse and then going into that highly rhythmic chorus. I enjoyed doing that a lot.
I love the backup group on that record.
And Norman Luboff Choir.
Oh.
I did a lot of work with them. And Norman was very talented.
I got another confession here. It's confession time, Ms. Stafford here.
What else have you done?
I like that song, Shrimp Boats, too.
Uh-huh.
But I was in financial difficulties about the time that came out. And you remember the little golden records that you could get for a quarter? They were 35 cents in Canada. And they came in a little picture sleeve, and they were either yellow or red. And they would put out other versions of famous songs.
Oh.
And I couldn't afford the regular Joe Stafford version of Shrimp Boats, so I bought the 25-cent copy on Little Golden Records. And I don't know who it was, but they couldn't sing nearly as well as you. And I listened to it as long as I could, and finally I just had to give up and just wait for it to come on the radio. So once again, please do forgive me for that.
Oh, you're forgiven.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's someone here on the telephone, though, that needs no forgiving. Bill and Margie DeMars live up in Odell, Illinois, and just yesterday I got a wonderful package. We get one of these every year, Miss Stafford. I wished you could get one. It's Margie makes the best cinnamon Christmas candy, and it's just not Christmas at our house without that great cinnamon candy.
Mm-hmm.
And it arrived yesterday, and we've been munching on it. And Bill has called in because he says that you are his favorite all-time singer. Tell you what, he probably can say it better than I. Bill DeMars, say hello to the great one, Miss Jo Stafford.
Hello, Miss Stafford. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Bill. And you?
Doing great. First of all, I want to thank you for all the years of the great music you provided for my family and everybody.
My pleasure.
And it's a treasure to just listen to you.
Good.
I got a question.
Mm-hmm.
Are you somehow related to Sergeant Alvin York?
Very distantly. My mother's maiden name was York. She was Anna York. And very distantly related. I never knew him or his family. I just knew that, as I say, very distantly, there's a relationship. And my folks were both, Dad and Mom were from Tennessee.
My favorite song by you is also, you were talking a moment ago, is Whispering Hope.
Yeah.
I never heard two people sing a song as fantastic as you and Gordon McRae did.
That was a fine piece of music.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you to do that together? I mean, to have the, because everything was in such precision between you two.
Well, see, in those days, we used to make four records in 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So Whispering Hope was made in about 45 minutes. That's what we had for each song, 45 minutes. And we didn't work together until that, the night of the record date. Luckily, we both, we both read music, so that was no problem. And we both had sung together before. So we just sort of melted together. It was no big problem, not hard at all.
Yeah, it's totally amazing how two blended together, your voices. I just love that song. I listen to it over and over again, even today.
Good.
I love your music, and I want to thank you, and I want to God bless you, too, and have a great Christmas, okay?
And you, too.
Okay, and thank you, and I'll let you get back to talking. I'm going to listen to the whole show, and take care.
Take care.
Bill and Margie DeMars, two of my favorite people, and Bill, God bless you, and thank you for calling in. Wow, what a great night we are having visiting with Miss Jo Stafford. We're talking a moment ago about the recording process. I love to ask technical questions,
mm-hmm.
and so let me shoot one out here. We all see people in the recording studios nowadays, some on the music videos. They're always wearing a pair of headsets, and being an audio engineer for 27 years, I can kind of guess probably what they're listening to, probably to another singer maybe. Maybe they're listening to parts, if not all, of the orchestra. They can feed you anything you want in your headsets. It can be one instrument, all the instruments. It can be another singer. It can be the background singer. It can even be yourself. Back when you first started recording, did you wear headsets?
No.
Tell me about how the process worked. How is it different nowadays than it was in the good old days?
Well, number one, as I say, we had to do four sides in 3 hours. And usually the musicians and sometimes the singers never saw anything until they came through the door. And so everybody had to kind of know what they were doing to begin with. And there wasn't time for temperament or ad-libbing, or you just got your music and you did what you were supposed to do as well as you could do it the first time.
And when you walked out the door, it was done. There was no pre-mixing and sweetening it up later. It was done when you walked out the door.
Well, you see, when I first started, you recorded on wax. And that was if you went, you could go through a whole arrangement and make a boo-boo in the last bar. Well, you had to do the whole thing over again. There was no patching or putting things together. That came later with tape. And but even so, in my last recording days, we were still working on three-hour sessions. There was none of that stuff of building a record on the date. You knew what you were doing when you came through the door, or you better.
You know, I will watch TV sometimes, and I'll see, or I'll listen to the radio, and I'll hear these high-paid personalities on there. And goodness, I get out my watch and I look at it and I say, my goodness, they have a commercial break every 3 to 5 minutes. Goodness gracious, anyone could talk for 3 minutes without making a mistake. Walden's been on here for quite some time. He hadn't made a single mistake, and I've only made one or two. And it kind of rubs me the wrong way. They make so much money, and they have such an easy way of doing it. I mean, anybody can talk for a couple of minutes without making a mistake. I just was wondering how you felt nowadays. You hear all this music, and you hear all the fancy things that can be done with computers and editors, and dubbing and overdubbing and all of that. That ever kind of ruin your day when you think about how much money people now are making when they can't sing nearly as well as you can?
No, because I don't think they had as much fun as we did. I don't see them laugh as much as we laughed. We had, even with a tight schedule, we had a barrel of laughs. We had a good time, and that was part of it. I don't see them laughing that much.
No, I think it's the people laughing at them. Do you think our quality of entertainment has gone down as technical advancements have gone up?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Amen. I'm going to ring the bell for that, Miss Stafford. I'm going to ring the bell. I don't often ring the bell during a celebrity interview, but I'll tell you, I'm going to have to ring the bell on that one. I'm so glad you see it that way. Would you care to take up for the country music field for just a moment? You know, they're always getting beat up on, and when they do say country, it's not the kind of country that I'm used to doing. I used to be an old country and western disc jockey and spin those good records.
Mm-hmm.
And if Hank Williams and Bob Wills was food, I'd starve to death here in Dallas, Texas, because I never hear any of it. And then when you do, people kind of take a they kind of laugh and snicker. That was some doggone good stuff with some doggone good talented people,
well,
wasn't it?
I'm telling you, and that Hank Williams and all those people, all those country folks, they're snickering too all the way to the bank.
That's right. That's right. Why did you cover Hank Williams' song? Was it because you liked the song, or was it just because you thought you maybe could take it to a different area? That's why we've learned a lot about covering songs since we've had some important people on here, and then we realize that a lot of times when somebody would have a hit in one area, it might not go into another area. So an artist who normally entertained in that area might cover that song. What was your reason for covering that Hank Williams song?
I liked it. I thought it was great material.
Yes, it was. It really was.
It had quality. It had style. It just had. It was good stuff.
And the country artist, one of which you were many years ago, they kept these labels alive, didn't they? Tell people how much these country people kept these labels alive. So that they could be bought up for jillions of dollars here like they have been here lately.
Well, they still are. I mean, I think country's one phase of one part of music that's kept its own. You know, it's doing just fine.
Doing just fine, thank you. And so are you. I just love the way your music continues to sound good to all of us. Why is that? Why does one kind of music sound good to us over a long period of time when we can go back and listen to other things and we think, ooh, how did I ever like that?
Well, I don't know. I think that in my heyday, it was a marvelous time for music because the songs had such quality. They were so good and had the ability to last through the years. They weren't shooting stars. They came and they stayed. Because they had quality, they're good, and good usually hangs around.
It does, and you, the singers, had good quality too, Miss Stafford.
Well, thank you.
Yes, Walden.
Oh, I just wanted to tell Joe that one of my favorite things that Paul did, that he did the Christmas show with Bing Crosby in the late 50s and 60s, and I thought that was such good quality. You probably don't even remember doing one, but I have one that you did when Rosemary was sick one night that you went in and did a Christmas show.
Did another show with Bing, too, just an hour. I think Jim Garner was on and I was on an hour show with Crosby. Yeah, and Paul did those shows, Christmas shows, with him every year.
And it's one thing I always pull out for the holidays, just to hear the great arrangement that Paul did.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
He was something else.
Well, folks, I don't want to keep Joe on too much longer, so if you got a call...
972-889-TALK, that's the number, 972-889-TALK, that's the number. Joe, if I could ask a couple of questions here while we're checking to see if anyone wants to call in and participate with us.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned a moment ago about... make sure the phone's not ringing... mentioned a moment ago some of the different names of people that you've worked with and known. I heard you mention Jack Benny. I heard you mention Dean Martin. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Bing Crosby. You mentioned them like I would mention my next-door neighbors. And I could tell you some interesting stories about my next-door neighbors, probably, but you or no one else is interested. I wondered if you might think back for a moment, just kind of close your eyes, and think back for a moment the times when you were at some of these people's houses or maybe with someone else's house when someone walked in. You mentioned Alice Faye. And, of course, my girlfriend, Kim Harris, just is in love with Bing Crosby.
Yeah.
And if you know a cute story that nobody else probably knows because they weren't there, we don't want to know anything embarrassing, but if you know a cute story about any of those names or any other names that I didn't mention, we certainly won't get mad if you want to share.
Well, I used to see, I didn't see Crosby that much socially, although I worked with him several times, but I never saw him socially. But I used to see Dean all the time because we had there's a songwriter, Sammy Kahn, you probably know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was an absolute ritual that every Sunday night, everybody went to Sam's house. And we'd go to Sam's, and we usually see a movie. And Dean was always there. I saw a lot of Dean. And Dean was just as cute and charming off off the screen as he was on. He was just a barrel of laughs, but he was also a sleepyhead. I mean, everybody would be just having a lot of fun, and but Dean would always, you know, around 9:30, Dean would start getting his sweater on to go home, and I used to really put Jeannie on. While Dean was getting his sweater on, I would be asking her a lot of questions. You know, how is it to be married to such a glamorous fellow who goes to all these Hollywood parties and sees all these stars and everything? It must be thrilling. And, you know, just putting her on. And she'd laugh, too, because Dean always got sleepy about 10 o'clock. So I used to tease him about that quite a bit.
We've got wide awake Troy down in Houston, Texas. He never gets sleepy, and he has called in with a question. Troy, welcome to the program, and say hello to Miss Joe Stafford.
Hello, Joe Stafford.
Hello, Troy.
I wanted to say, being maybe kind of a little bit younger than some of the music that has come out, you know, heard we had a nice radio station here that kind of has gone kaput in the last few years, but not without a large following. And at college, we were all listening to the station, and when it took it off the air because of, I guess, becoming some, I guess, pre-programmed station, we were all pretty upset. And I had bought probably the most expensive CD I ever bought before. It was your CD. It was at some highfalutin station, I mean, a CD place out here. And I was so angry at how much they had jacked up the price. And then it has become my favorite CD, and everybody in the college dorm started borrowing it after I'd listened to it. It was just so funny to see that my taste in radio playing in the dorm.
Uh-huh.
They started, what is that? Who's playing? It was the best of Joe Stafford, and everybody started kind of like, well, hey, let me borrow that CD.
Wonderful. Tell them to go out and buy it.
It was just funny. I thought I was the only one that you know, listened to you know, old music and appreciated it and thought everything was great, and hear everybody else just, you know.
Well, that's music to my ears.
I got the CD back, and they had to get their own. So. But, everything from shrimp boats and to the Stanley Steamer, everything, it's just so funny that here I thought I was all bent out of shape.
Well, listen, that sounds, those are real kind words. I'm glad to hear them.
Well, I wish we had our radio station back here. They kind of, I think they went to AM and then were just forced out of the market. But
yeah, I know. They change from time to time, and no one ever knows why.
KQE is a station here in Houston that was very good about playing everything that I think a lot of people enjoyed, but I just don't think that they got the support that they needed or never looked around, or I don't know, but I think they still have a strong market here for that.
Tell you what, Troy, you just keep listening to Yesterday USA, and every Monday through Thursday from 10:30 p.m. until midnight, Mike Handy and I will be playing some Joe Stafford. How'll that be?
Well, great.
All righty. Well, don't be a stranger, my friend, and thank you for calling in.
Bye-bye, Troy.
Goodbye.
There's Troy down in Houston, Texas. He's a little lonesome tonight because there's not enough stations like Yesterday USA. And you know what, Miss Stafford, there wouldn't be a Yesterday USA if it weren't for good people like Troy and the good volunteers that we have here on Yesterday USA. And one of them, Kim, are you out there somewhere? Will you come back here and shut this door? The birds, we have four parrots out there, and they're all talking to one another. And I know everything that they have ever said, and I have it memorized. So, and I want to hear what Joe Stafford has to say. Would you be so... Oh, is that what it was? Oh, well, okay, say hello to Big Bird, Miss Stafford.
Hello, Big Bird.
Okay, now he's happy. All right, if you'll shut the door here. I need to pay one of our hardest working volunteers here, and I'm going to ask you not to write out a check, but to do something that's real easy, and I hope real fun, but somebody did call in at the last moment. This will be our last call, 972-889-TALK. Hello, you're on the radio.
Hey, Jim Gibbon, Laurel, Mississippi.
Oh, the man with the golden tonsils. Go ahead, sir. Say hello to Joe Stafford.
Hi, Miss Stafford.
Hi.
I was a college student in 1950 and sat next to you for a few minutes. You were a guest on Ralph Edwards' Through the Consequences radio show.
Oh, yeah?
And you were sort of a ringer. We were in the third or fourth row, and so when he asked for just some song would be so simple anybody could sing it, and ask for a volunteer from the audience. You were planted there next to me and went up on stage. And so you were part of the truth, the consequences. I was interested in your Darlene Edwards, the fact that the things are so horrible. And I've always been impressed with the fact that you have the magic quality of perfect pitch. And I understand it's almost impossible for someone with perfect pitch to sing off pitch.
I don't have perfect pitch.
Oh.
When you have perfect pitch, you sing right smack dab on the note, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Oh.
I have what's called relative pitch. You give me a note, and from that note, I can sing any other note you want. But so I don't have the perfect pitch, and so if I listen real carefully, I can do it wrong.
Well, one of your Darlene Edwards recordings got me in trouble with a coworker one day. We were in the lunch break, and I'd brought in a little battery-operated audio cassette with I dubbed off my LP.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in, and he heard what was coming out of that speaker, and he started chewing me out immediately for running down his batteries. And I couldn't convince him otherwise. There was no cut on that album that sounded like the batteries were operating correctly.
That's funny.
You've got a type of music that you haven't mentioned yet, folk songs. And I don't mean country. I mean, the traditional material, Mother Centuries, the way Alan Lomax or Susan Reed, someone.
Right.
And they're great. How did you get into the traditional music?
My mother and father were from there.
Ah.
They were from up in the Great Smoky Mountains in a little town called Gainesboro, Tennessee.
That would explain.
So I heard these songs growing up. And
there had to be some personal connection, because nobody does those things, and I'm into folk music, and I was loving them.
Yeah.
And you still have it on your CDs from Corinthian.
There's some great, great songs.
Well, I'm going to have to replace mine on a CD, and listen, I enjoy talking to you.
Thank you.
Jim Gibbon from Laurel, Mississippi. Jimbo, thanks for all you do here at Yesterday USA, another one of our great not only listeners but volunteers as well. As I was saying, Miss Stafford, nobody makes any money out of this, and several of us have to kind of reach down real deep in our pockets and spend a little extra to keep it going on the times when the donations don't come in.
Mm-hmm.
One of those people is a man that I have the pleasure of sharing the microphone every Monday through Thursday. His name is Mike Handy. He's a wonderful lawyer, H-A-N-D-Y, just like Handy as a pocket on a shirt, mm-hmm. as we always say. And we share the microphone here, and Mike looks over Yesterday USA, and I've kind of adopted him as a father. So, but I've never paid him a penny. I probably wouldn't take it if I had it, but I need to do something nice for him, and I can't think of anything nicer than to have you say something that he could play many times over and over and over on the air. So would you be so kind as to say, identify yourself, however you'd like to do that, and mm-hmm. remind our listeners that they're listening to Mike Handy, maybe you might like to call him the Handyman, or Mike Handy mm-hmm. the Handyman, here on Yesterday USA. That we don't have call letters. We're point-to-point broadcast, so we don't need that. So our station is Yesterday USA. The man's name, again, is Mike Handy, and you know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to close all of the mics here so that we only hear you, and we've shut the door on the birdcage so we won't hear him. So we'll just be listening.
Okay. Hi there, folks. This is Joe Stafford. And why don't you all join me, and let's listen to Mike Handy on Yesterday USA.
Oh, mercy. Now, you know what? I'm a jealous kind of a person. I just can't stand for anybody to have a little something that I don't have. And I was wondering if maybe you might do one similar to that. Not exactly like similar to that for me. My name, of course, Bill Bragg, B-R-A-G-G. Sometimes I call myself the man with a million friends. Other times I call myself the midnight mayor of Richardson. That's where I live.
Mike Bragg,
Bill Bragg.
Bill, I mean, B-R-A-G-G.
Uh-huh, Bill Bragg, yeah. B-R-A-G-G. So you're so clever, so creative. That's all the instructions you need. So once again, I will turn off everything mm-hmm. so we only hear you. Take your time and just whatever comes to mind.
Hi, folks. This is Joe Stafford, and I'm going to brag a little, and I'm going to listen to Bill Bragg on Yesterday USA.
Oh, it's time for me to ring my bell again. I've been ringing about twice. Oh, Miss Stafford, God bless you and thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Oh, marvelous, marvelous. Walden, goodness gracious, I'm going to let you have the last word. And you're the man of the hour here. You know, Walden makes all of these happen. You know, I have absolutely nothing to do with this. Walden is the man.
No.
He takes care of everything. He and Tess Russell are the world's greatest, and I love them. I admire. In fact, I don't love them. I idolize them.
Talk with Tess today.
Oh, she's a sweetheart, and
yes,
boy, I'll tell you, we would be nothing. I'd still be selling pencils on the street if it wasn't for Tess. Walden, you got the last word, my friend.
I'll probably call you next week, Joe. Just thank you privately. But
mm-hmm.
I just want to wish you a Merry Christmas, and thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Well, you're most welcome, and I wish all of you a Merry Christmas, too.
Miss Stafford, God bless you. We love you, and continue forever, please.
I'll try.
All right, my dear.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Joe Stafford from December of 2000 with Bill Bragg and Walden Hughes. And it's funny, I talked to her, I think in 1997, and she was a remarkable lady with a ton of talent, but was very, very relaxed on the call. And also, she didn't take herself seriously at all. You know, I said, why did you stop singing? You still were singing well. She said, I don't know, I just figured it was kind of time to stop in the 60s and... everybody was grown up and we had other things to do. And I thought, I can stop. You know, most singers wouldn't do that, but she did. And just a very, one of my favorite singers of all time with regard to big bands. Anyway, I'm glad Walden picked that one. And he's got another one for January. So we'll think about that. January, February, whenever he's on next. Go ahead, Max. I would hope.
Oh,
that
I'm just going to shut the screen share off.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. But everybody can unmute if you'd like.
3-1 screen sharing meeting controls.
Even Jaws had to get involved. Yeah, it's off.
Good. I don't know much about Joe Stafford, but it was a good interview. It was interesting to hear. I never knew Bill Bragg or heard him before, so he sounded like a good person, and it was nice to hear. Thank you. I'm going to head off because I got stuff to do. My brother.
Okay.
See you all later.
Good good. Now. Well, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year, everyone. Peace out and see you later.
Joe Stafford had perfect pitch, and that's some... Well, she already talked about that. That can be tough when she hears notes and knows what pitches they align to, and you don't. I have relative pitch, but it's not perfect. And people who have had perfect pitch have told me it sometimes can be a curse. Anyway, remarkable. And they got into John and Darlene, which was also something incredible because she was so good with regard to the perfect pitch. She had to, this was a thing that she and John and her and Paul Weston did where they would sing and play flat on purpose. Or add a couple of extra measures to a song. And you can't do that well unless you're really, really good. And she was marvelous. She did a version of Stayin' Alive, you know, which was a contemporary song. Flatted it a bit, purposely added some measures. Wow, it was just incredible. Had us on the floor. Anyway... I hope some other people are here, but nobody's unmuted yet.
I unmuted.
There you go. There's Joni. You remember Joe Stafford, don't you?
Absolutely. I loved her work.
Yeah, I did
and
too.
And I loved Darlene Edwards. And I got such a kick out of, well, I always... loved satire
mm-hmm.
and humor and things that would make me laugh. And she sounds like she was, I think I've heard this interview before.
You may have, yeah.
Many years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
She was a very down-to-earth person. Yes, very down-to-earth. Like I think I have some Jonathan and Darlene Christmas songs.
And would be
if I do, we can't tonight because, we could do it tomorrow during the day. Well, I'll go find them and we'll play some of them because if you've not heard them do Christmas songs as Jonathan and Darlene, you got to hear it. You have to hear it. So we will do that if I have any. Well, we'll look tonight.
Oh, I hope you find some.
Yep, I hope so too.
Right.
They've got several albums out. I think, I don't know how many.
Well, she said five.
Five of Jonathan and Darlene?
Yeah.
Yeah. And she on her own, she's got a ton. She may have done, I know she did some Christmas stuff as Joe Stafford, but I can't remember whether we have any as with Jonathan and Darlene. So we'll look. Good. Should be fun.
Yeah.
Baseball and football in the background as we listen to this as well as that. Good stuff.
Uh-oh.
And it hasn't rained here yet, except for last night. It didn't rain here at all today. So,
well, a couple days ago I heard one huge clap of thunder.
Oh.
And when I went to the dining room and had breakfast, if anybody else, if they heard it, and they didn't.
Hmm.
But one of our caregivers said there was rain on the roof.
Wow.
So there wasn't too much.
John said he just heard lightning on the radio. So thunder may not be far away. There's supposed to be thunder showers tonight. But no rain out there yet. He just went outside. But, you know, you can hear the static sounds of lightning on the radio often.
Oh, when I was growing up, the lightning ruined all kinds of broadcasts.
Ah.
Because you'd be listening to something and you knew that lightning was very near. And, well, what I would try to do was try to change the radio to, I did a lot of DXing when I was a kid, as I think I probably have told you. And so I would look for a faraway station so that I could hear the program without the lightning.
Oh.
Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't.
Sometimes it didn't, yeah.